Julian Richards, who's from the Archaeology Data Service and the Archaeology Department of the University of York. Julian.
Thank you very much. Okay. Well, I think the aim of this presentation is to allow you, the audience, to take on the role of social anthropologists, really, in the observation of a foreign tribe, which I class myself as the sole representative of. And I've realised in listening to the presentations so far today that my approach to some of the themes raised by this conference are rather different. I'm going to be talking about archaeology in the historic environment, both above and below ground archaeology. And my approach to this is rather different because of the different nature of our primary sources. Digitisation is seen in a rather different light, in that our data doesn't exist in paper form in its primary form. It exists as layers of soil or as pieces of pot or as grains of pollen. I'm also only going to obviously provide a very brief introduction in 15 minutes, and really it's just a few random personal thoughts that occurred to me when thinking about the themes of the conference. But what I'm going to try to do is initially just, and very briefly, outline the development of ICT in archaeology in about 2 minutes. But this is to give you your sort of ethnography of the species of archaeologists and how they've come to use ICT in the way they do. And then I'll look at the impact that digital resources have had in the discipline, focusing particularly on the internet, which has had the most major impact, and end, as requested with the other speakers, with looking at some current challenges and opportunities. So to talk about the sub-discipline, as I call it, of archaeological computing to start with, there's quite a long tradition of the use of computers in archaeology, which I think basically stems from it having lots of data, and we dig it up by the wheelbarrow load, basically, and there is too much of it to analyse by hand. And alongside the fact that obviously we sit between the humanities and the sciences, where the development of computers and their use in data analysis is perhaps better established, has meant that computer analysis is now quite embedded in archaeology, and in some ways the development of archaeological computing parallels the development of computing technology itself, going back to the first applications of the mid-1950s of using punch card machines to sort American pottery data from the American Southwest. So the computers were first used really for their number-crunching abilities, and archaeological computing was first allied to statistics. It was used as a testing ground by people developing some of the early techniques of multivariate statistics and multivariate clustering. And there's a particular cemetery at Muncingham Rye, a Latin cemetery, where the 300-plus brochures from there have been subjected to every clustering algorithm under the sun in the development of this technique by Frank Hodgson and various statistician collaborators. And one of the early textbooks on the subject, Duran and Hodgson, Partnership Between a Computer Scientist and an Archaeologist / Statistician, published in 1975, represents that sort of partnership between maths and computers in archaeology. With the advent of the microcomputer in the early 1980s, computers began to be used in fieldwork recording in archaeology and in database applications. And when I arrived as a fresh-faced postgraduate research student in the computing department at then North Staffordshire Polytechnic in 1980, I was presented proudly with the first generation Z80 CPM operating system micro with 8-inch floppy disks. And I remember that on one of these 8-inch disks you could actually get 120k of data. And I was presented with that, with which to analyse some 3,000 Anglo-Saxon burials. So there's a period of quite rapid development of archaeological computing for data retrieval and analysis, not just statistics, particularly an emphasis on the development of databases, hand-coded databases, before proprietary products existed. And when Nick Ryan and I wrote the first textbook in archaeological computing in 1985, the emphasis was very much on information storage and retrieval. And you can see on the cover of their latest high-tech design, I don't know if anybody could recognise it, the daisy wheel from a daisy wheel printer, which was the latest in technology. We've seen alongside that over the last 40, 50 years, then the development of a technocracy in this area, which is represented in many ways. If you browse through the pages of the proceedings of the annual Computer Applications in Archaeology conference, which was first founded in 1973, and there on the left is an early proceedings complete with paper tape trail around the edge. Those proceedings chart really the history of the subdiscipline. It started with about 20 pioneers and has now grown to an annual conference which has become international of 300 or 400, and since 1992 has met outside the UK as well. And this sort of growth in the subdiscipline has also corresponded with a globalisation of the discipline and its extension into new technical areas. I think with the World Archaeological Congress and the publication of its proceedings on archaeology and the information age, archaeological computing became mainstream. It was no longer just the pioneers, and it began to be applied in a whole set of mainstream areas. GIS were first used in the States, in Australia and the Netherlands, for heritage management issues, for the control of development, and then became an essential analytical tool used by academics. Similarly, VR, virtual reality, initially used for heritage presentation in museums, is now also beginning to be used in analysis, answering questions such as how did the social use of space function within this building, or what was this landscape like in the past, and now has grown also to have its own conference represented by these vast proceedings on the right-hand side. So, although applications of ICT in the subdiscipline continue to develop, I would suggest that their use has in some sense come of age and is no longer regarded as an area for fanatics. It's integrated into the mainstream. And what's particularly interesting, I think, is that the cutting edge of a lot of the recording systems is actually not within academia, it's within the field profession where people are gathering data on the ground. And if we try to define the character of digital resources in archaeology, try and understand what makes it different from other arts and humanities, I would put it down to sort of these three bullet points. And I'm not trying to say that these features are unique to archaeology, that they don't apply in history and other areas, but I would argue that put together they're a key feature of archaeological computing. First of all, the point that the data is itself primary and irreplaceable. The old cliche that excavation is the unrepeatable experiment, the equivalent of the historian finding a new manuscript, reading it once, taking some notes, and then burning the manuscript. And of course it makes the digital preservation of those notes even more important, especially as these days those notes are usually collected in the first place just in digital form. They are born digital and they don't exist in a notebook to start with. So with the days of handheld computers, of data logging from survey equipment on site, all this stuff goes straight into the computer. So digitization happens in the field. It's not a secondary stage of the creation of secondary data. This whole issue of destruction of the record leads to a preservation ethic towards publication in great detail and the importance of the archive, which I shall return to later. Secondly, there's the quantity of the data. As I mentioned, there's lots of it. When I first met the director of the computing service when I moved to York, he was very wary of me, because in his previous job at another university, it wasn't the physicists or the chemists who had provided him with most data. It was the archaeologists who filled up his mainframe, and he was scared that I was going to do the same thing. But excavations lead to tens of thousands of layers and artifacts, and the new forms of data which are growing by the day are extremely space hungry. At the moment in the Archaeology Data Service, we're working on a project which is called the Big Data Project, sponsored by English Heritage. And it's looking at particular forms of data, such as multi-beam sonar, surveys underwater, laser scanning of rock art, LIDAR surveys of whole landscapes, and we're generally talking about gigabytes, if not terabytes, of data. And those raise particular issues of what it is important to preserve and of how that data can be disseminated and can be reused. Obviously, grid technology has become very important there. And that also raises the emphasis on the third point there, the variety of the data, that it's multimedia, includes sound and video, there's CAD, GIS, VR, geophysics, and many other forms of remote sensing. But it's the interplay of all those different resources that is important and how they inform one another. So to try and sum up then the impact that these digital resources have had in archaeology, it's really all embracing. On data collection, because the techniques allow it, more is recorded. On data retrieval, because it's more efficient, there is more reuse of digital data rather than going out and collecting data from scratch. And I've noticed a particular change in undergraduate and postgraduate research theses, which are now tending to much more use digital data that other people have collected. Changes in data analysis, more emphasis on analytical methods, particularly on analysing data in terms of space, although we still have problems in representing time. Most archaeological questions revolve around what, when, and where. And we're pretty good now at dealing with the what and the where, but software isn't really good at very good at representing that when dimension, which is critical to both me and you. But also changes in data dissemination. Because we can publish more now, then this whole distinction between publication and supporting data, what I call the archive, is becoming ever more blurred. And the illustration on the right reminds me to mention a particular case study of excavations at West Heslerton, which that's taken from when there's on-site recording of every item of bone, every fragment of bone in three dimensions. That means that there is immediate analysis and retrieval of that information on site, which affects the research strategy, the excavation strategy as it goes along, allowing new questions to be asked as work proceeds. And there has been rapid publication leading straight from those electronic records into electronic publication of both synthesis and archive. In amongst all this, of course, is the ubiquitous role of the internet and the profound impact in web-based catalogues, such as the ADS sites, such as sites maintained by National Monuments Records, online publications in effect, such as the Silchester archive on the lower left-hand side, and the development of e-journals, Internet Archaeology as one of the first peer-reviewed online journals now going for, well, celebrating its 10th anniversary next year. And these have had an impact, well, the internet and these forms of internet dissemination have had an impact on the type of questions that can be posed, on the form that teaching and learning takes. They've had an impact on public access, and this is something that's not, well, has been mentioned by some of the speakers. The Portal Antiquities Scheme site on the top right is in effect a community website with people contributing their own data to that. So there's a level of interactivity of recording and research. And the internet has obviously also had an impact on how things are found. And increasingly now we're seeing a move away from this multiplication of single websites and the creation of single things to the development of tools, particularly portlet tools, which allow people to, rather than try and get everybody to come to your website, is try and place your resource on everybody else's website within institutional portals and so forth. And the final area I wanted to focus on is the impact, particularly on the changing nature of publication and how that is affecting the practice of archaeology. I mentioned before that there's been an imperative on publication in great detail. And the internet has become a metaphor for multivocal publication and has been used by proponents of postmodernism to allow them to develop multiple pathways through their interpretation of a material, but then to drill down to the supporting data underneath, which will support those multiple pathways and will allow other people to come along and reinterpret that data. Chapel Buick is one example of this. The Arve Valley survey, where the synthesis is published in Internet Archaeology and the data archive is held in ADS, is another example of this. And following on from Matthew's request for better citation, I think that people are quite good at citing the publication side of this. We find lots of references to the paper in Internet Archaeology. We don't find so many references to reuse of the archive, but we know that people are downloading and reusing that archive. I had a student who took the data and reinterpreted it, for example, and came up with a different distribution of sites based on that same material. And one project we're involved in, funded under the AHRC ICT strategy scheme, Making the Leap, is linking electronic archives and publications and exploring some of these issues of peer review, editorial control, preservation and citation. So to sum up, there are inevitably lots of challenges and opportunities as we make more use of digital resources, and I've chosen to focus on just two areas: challenges for the user in finding things, and for the information provider in advertising your wares in multiple shop windows, and challenges for the researcher and publisher in coming to terms with new means of publication. Fortunately, a lot of these things have been mentioned by previous speakers: problems of interoperability in cyber infrastructures, allowing people to drill down into quite deeply into resources and search across them, using things such as the semantic web, so I don't need to go into those. But issues of quality control, I think, come up in both the retrieval side, in terms of the quality of data that users find, but also then from the publisher's point of view, in quality control of archives and of publications.